Well, it's that time again, and the doctor is in. Yeah, it's time once again for Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon. And this is your doctor signing in. And the music signing out. There it goes, fading away into the distance. It's gone. What do you know? It's time once again to do that funny thing that we do every week about roughly this time. Normally, I do it on a Saturday, but here it is a Sunday evening, Sunday, November the 12th, right around a few minutes until 9 o'clock my time. But of course, I'm time shifted. Woo! Oh, that's just so weird. Time shifting into some point in the future where you're listening, because this program is a podcast. It's not live. Can't be live. Well, I guess it could be live, but it isn't. It's a podcast. It's recorded and released via an RSS feed and then going across the internet, being downloaded in just amazing technology at work. Yes, indeed. You gotta love it. Oh, well. Anyway, this week, we've got a lot of cool things happening. Now, why wasn't the podcast on and available Saturday as usual? Well, because I was out of town. I was down in Greenville, South Carolina, attending a class. And, of course, since I was there, I couldn't be here. And, of course, actually, technically, I could have done the podcast from down there because I had my laptop, I had my headset. What more do you need to do a podcast? But my attention was directed to the class because I'm a conscientious person when it comes to taking a class. Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about the fact that this program, Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon, is part of the Tech Podcast Network.
This show is a proud member of the TechPodcast.com network. Find out more about this show and others at www.techpodcast.com. Tech Podcast. If it's tech, it's here.
Yes, indeed. If it's tech, it's here. Because we're a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. That was Brian Wade doing his little voiceover to officially identify Dr. Bill the Computer Curmudgeon as part of the Tech Podcast Network. There's a lot of other good techie shows available at techpodcast.com. You can find out, as he said, about this show and others there. Of course, you can also find out about this show at our website, thecomputercurmudgeon.com. thecomputercurmudgeon.com. It's just amazing how that rolls off the tongue so easily. I'm sure you can do it too. Can't you? Yes, indeed. Okay, some of you can't. You'll have to practice. Get after it. Okay, let's talk about this week on Dr. Bill the Computer Curmudgeon, the blog, and go directly into the news. And here's the news of the week. First of all, we start off with our Geek Software of the Week. Now, I don't know about you. Personally, I really get into the Geek Software of the Week because Geek Software of the Week, it's just cool. It's cool to come up with free, open source, cool technologies that I can share with you to make your techie life better. Your geek existence is enhanced by Geek Software of the Week. And, of course, we do geek projects sometimes, and we do geek culture sometimes, and we do a lot of geek things. It's just a geeky kind of program, I guess. Anyway, the Geek Software of the Week this week is Sandboxy. Now, that's a lame name, okay? Between you and me and the wall, okay, it's a lame name, which actually is alliterative. Lame name. Anyway, I digress. The point is Sandboxy is a sandbox. Now, if you will hearken back to days of yore, which is a strange way of saying the past, I don't know why days of yore, days of mine, days of your, days of theirs. Nah, anyway, point is, back in the past, when you were a little kid, you probably played in a sandbox. Now, what's unique about a sandbox? A sandbox, in my case at least, was about a 6x6 wooden box that my dad built, and he filled it with sand, and I was able to go in there and play around and have a shovel and just have lots of fun. And I had friends that came in and did the same thing. Lots of fun. But the cool thing about a sandbox is all the sand, more or less, most of the sand stayed in the box. Some of it got on our clothes and got taken into the house and got in the carpet, and Mom wasn't happy, but that's a whole nother story. The point is that sand is supposed to stay in the sandbox, right? Okay, now, here's what the term sandbox means when it comes to techie geeky things like what we're talking about, and that is your program that you're working with, let's say, Internet Explorer, for instance, is in its own little sandbox. So it can't get outside that sandbox to do any harm. And of course, if it's Internet Explorer, it's prone to do some harm, because if you hit the wrong website and get infected, Internet Explorer, because of ActiveX technology, can it launch that and just disperse it through your system. Problemo. That's, you know, Spanish lingo that basically means you've got a problem. Okay, I took a year of Spanish in high school. I didn't really do too well with it, but I took it. Okay, no hablo español. I know enough to say that because I really don't speak that much Spanish. Hablo español un poco. It's just a little. Never mind. Anyway, point is that the sandbox technology is kind of cool. Think of it as a virtual sandbox. That sounds real cool and geeky already. A virtual sandbox that your program can run around and play in and not infect the rest of your computer. It walls it off from the rest of your computer, which is really cool, because what you can then do is run Sandboxy, establish this virtual sandbox, run your other program. It doesn't have to be Internet Explorer, but for the sake of argument, let's say it's Internet Explorer. You run that in the sandbox, and then you're safe, because whatever happens to the Internet Explorer instance in the sandbox won't go to the rest of your computer. Really cool stuff. Now, I must admit, I found this program by way of the Security Now podcast with Steve Gibson, because I listened to Steve Gibson on the Security Now podcast with Leo Laporte. Leo is the dude, okay? I mean, twit.tv. If you're not clued in to twit.tv, you need to go there. So, anyway, point is, I was listening to Security Now. This was actually months ago, I think, that I was listening to it, and they were talking about Sandboxy, and I thought, whoa, that would make a cool geek software of the week. And then I actually didn't mention it because I had other geek software of the weeks that came up. And so, hey, you know, it got kind of, what would you call it? Got it queued up, I guess. You might say it's queued up in the queue for geek software of the week. And this is the week, ta-da, that we're talking about Sandboxy. Speaking of which, just a digression a little bit here. I seem to be doing a lot of digressing in this podcast. So, anyway, almost said broadcast, didn't I? Some of you caught that. Some of you said, you almost said broadcast. Yeah, well, see, I used to be in radio many years ago. I had a radio broadcast, and occasionally my tongue will hearken back to those days, and I'll say it, and what are you going to do? I probably should be saying netcast. You know, we're just talking about Leo Laporte, and he's trying to get netcast accepted rather than podcast. And so then I'd be really confused because I'd be talking about a podcast and then a broadcast and then a netcast. Maybe we should just call them casts. You know, then who knows, you know, what you're talking about. Some of you are saying, yeah, who knows what you're ever talking about. But anyway, I was going to digress to an email that I got just mere moments, well, no, not moments, a day ago. I got it yesterday, okay? This is a new listener to the podcast. His name is Robert. Hello, Robert. Glad you're listening. Robert says, hi, Dr. Bill. Greetings from Tennessee. I stumbled across your podcast, and I've listened to the past few months' shows recently. Whoa, this guy has been busy listening to the last few months' shows. Okay, wow. You know, Robert, You You really kind of need a hobby. Anyway, point is, he said, I just wanted to email you and let you know that I really enjoy it. I'm a Leo fan, me too, and he's tough to compare to. Gotta admit, I agree. You know what's interesting about that, though, is Leo and I are pretty much the same age. I mean, you know, like within a month or so of each other, we're pretty much the same age. So, kind of weird, actually. Anyway, but he says, but you have such a great on-air personality. You're so genuine. You are just yourself, and that makes it fun to listen. Good job. I've got you subbed in juice. Keep it up, dude. Hey, Robert, I'll do that. I'll keep it up just for you. And, oh, a few other thousand people that happen to be listening to the podcast. But at any rate, sounds cool. I'm glad you're out there listening. Speaking of which, another good buddy of mine sent me an email, as long as we're on emails. This is a guy that I've been corresponding with that's been listening to the podcast for quite some time. His name is Elio, and he's from Canada. Well, that's as far as we'll go. We won't use last names. We won't identify anybody any further than that, because actually I don't know. But at any rate, he and I discussed quite a few things. He was a little bit concerned about some of my talk last podcast about political things, you know, saying, look, Doc, you know, hey, the political thing, I know you're into it, but that's just not what the podcast is about, and can you kind of lay back on the political stuff? And, you know, he's really right. I agree 100%. This is a techie, geeky, computery podcast, and I will keep my politics to myself. But, you know, as long as we're talking about Leo a few minutes ago, you know, Leo occasionally lets some of his politics slip into the podcast, and he's of the somewhat liberal persuasion. I'm of the somewhat conservative persuasion. So we kind of equal ourselves out. So, hey, it works out okay. But Elio has a point. I think he's right. This should be a computery geeky podcast, and we'll just leave it at that. Okay? So, but he asked a question. And I've been thinking about his question, was thinking about it earlier tonight, as a matter of fact, when I knew that I was going to be doing the podcast and knew I was going to mention his email. So, of course, I was thinking about it. That's kind of how it works. Anyway, he says, listening to some of your older shows, I heard you'd ask listeners to send you questions, which, by the way, I did, and I still do. If you've got questions, send them to the doctor. I'll find the answer for you. If I don't know it right off the top of my head, you know, I'm not all-knowing. That's up to somebody else, not me. Upstairs, not me. But I can find things out, and if you have a question, I will attempt, with great effort, to find the answer. So, let's continue. Although you don't seem to be answering many questions lately, there's a reason for that. The reason I haven't been answering a lot of questions lately is because you haven't been asking me a lot of questions lately. So, ask the questions, I'll find the answers, and put them on the podcast. But I can't answer if nobody asked me questions, but he did, so we're going to answer the question. Okay. Let's keep going. He says, I'm going to go ahead and ask you one. Don't feel obliged to answer. Of course I'm going to answer. So here goes. When running Edwido or now AVG anti-spyware, is it best to do it in safe mode? I was talking with a new IT guy at work, and he says it's always best to run anti-spyware programs in safe mode. He claims the program will detect more offenders that way. What's your take on this? Have a great weekend. Elio. Okay, Elio, good question. Whoa, excellent question. And the answer is a little bit complicated. Not terribly complicated, but just a little bit complicated. First of all, his basic premise, I'm talking about the IT guy that you're talking about, the basic premise is sound, and that is if you run anti-spyware in safe mode, it can eliminate, and listen very closely, it can eliminate more software, and when I say software, malware, more quickly in safe mode. However, it won't find more spyware in safe mode than it will in normal mode. Now, here's why. Okay, think with me. Well, let me back up just another step. First of all, in my particular business as a computer consultant, I have de-spyware'd, if that's a term, a bunch of computers. We're talking thousands of computers. And I've used Adaware, I've used Spybot Search and Destroy, I've used Edwido, I've used all kinds of anti-spyware programs, okay, in doing that. And I've noticed something about all good ones, okay? And, of course, I'm only going to use the good ones, so there you go. So, for instance, let's just take Adaware as an example. If you run Adaware, first of all, you're going to... Listen closely. The first thing you're going to do is get the latest signatures, right? No use running it if you updated it 6 months ago, and now you're going to run the anti-spyware, and you haven't updated the signatures because now you're 6 months out of date, so all the new spyware is going to cream you, okay? So the first thing you're going to do is update your signatures, okay? Okay. Copacetic, we're down with that. So now we've updated our signatures, and now we run the anti-spyware. Now what's going to happen? It's going to look through the system and try to find signatures that match its signature list. If it does that, okay, then it will take actions based on what the program has determined it should do. Now what's that going to be? Well, it depends. In most cases, when it finds the signature, it will attempt to remove it or at least quarantine it. Okay, with me so far? So now what's going to happen if it finds a program that is running in memory and therefore is open? It's going to say, whoop, I can't delete that program because it's running. I don't have full access to it. So it will come up with a message that says, do you want to restart the computer to get rid of this instance of the malware? Now, why does it do that? Because it has built into the program the ability to sense that it exists, but that it can't get to it to quarantine it or get rid of it, so it will then reboot the computer, and before the computer loads anything else, in other words, like it was in safe mode, it will then eliminate the malware before it has a chance to run and get in memory and lock itself into your system. So, basically what I'm saying is all of these programs have the ability to sense the malware and know that it needs to reboot to get rid of it, or basically go into safe mode on its own, all right? Now, what this IT guy buddy of his is saying is reasonable in that if you're already in safe mode, then the program isn't going to be running in memory, because safe mode doesn't load all the drivers and programs and precursors and all that kind of stuff. So your system is already going to be in a state that it can get rid of the malware. So in effect, you're saving yourself a bit of a step. However, here's where I had to think about this and really kind of think it through. At the same time, you're also not really saving yourself that much time, because if you're already in your system and it's up and running and you run your anti-spyware and you get your signatures and then you run it, 99.9% of the time, it's not going to find something that's going to require it to reboot to get itself into its own safe mode, so to speak, to get rid of it. It's going to find something it can just pow, zap, and it's gone. Okay? So by taking the time to log out of your system, take it all the way down, bring it all the way back up into safe mode, you've actually artificially caused yourself more time wasted, because I assume you're going to want to run anti-spyware pretty regularly. So you're artificially making yourself take more time if you do that, because 99% of the time or more, you're going to be fine to just run it in normal mode, okay? Does that make sense? Hopefully that makes sense to you. That's the answer to the question. Now see, wasn't it worthwhile asking that question? Yes, indeed it was. And we took 19 minutes almost answering it, so we're going to have to really rush through the rest of the podcast. Okay, let's get with it. Next item, broadband over power lines. Now, our good buddy Dark Moon straightened me out on this one. Way to go, Dark Moon. You're keeping me straight. I like that. Okay, here's the deal. I found an instance, an article, that talked about how the FCC has officially endorsed broadband over power line, or BPL, classifying it as an information service and basically making it available for power companies to offer broadband in this fashion. Now, it's not going to be something that's going to happen in the next you know, few weeks or anything. It's going to take a little while. But basically, here's the deal. In theory, they're supposed to be able to offer broadband internet services over the power line. Now, Dark Moon brought up the point that, you know, this is a really lame idea. Because, do you remember the old plastic doohickeys that you found in these cheapy catalogs that you could plug into your, you know, into the wall socket, and you'd have TV going through your power? Or, you know, there was somebody that had an intercom that would work through the power line. Have you ever noticed that in all those cases, it really didn't work that well? That's because power lines, transmit power. And power, when you run power and there's electronic equipment, it causes interference. So unless this technology is, like, way out there cool and has gotten past this, I don't see this being a really good alternative, okay? So I agree with Dark Moon on that. Dude, you were thinking on that one, because it's just really not a great idea. But if they somehow pull some rabbit out of a hat technologically and manage to make it work, I've got some folks out there in the boonies. Dude, they are looking for internet. So I'll let them know if it becomes available and if it's viable. Okay, next item. Office 2007 goes gold. And there was chirping of crickets everywhere. Why? Because we really don't care. I don't know about you, but Office just keeps getting more and more and more and more bloated. Okay? It has features that I'm not even sure Microsoft knows what they are anymore. Okay? Stuff that I've never used, will never use, and most people I know will never use. But they just keep sticking more features in it. It's like somebody with a clay statue, and they just keep sticking these clay doohickeys on the statue, and it just keeps getting lumpier and heavier and gooier, and it's just a mess. Well, that's kind of what's happening with Office. Office used to be lean and fast and not take up a lot of memory and didn't take up a lot of disk space. And now it's bloated and heavy and it takes a powerhouse of a system just to run the thing. Now, 99% of everybody that I know can get by with just plain old Open Office, and it's free. Okay? Office is like $400+. And like I said, it's got all these features that who in the world uses them? Now, I'm sure there are people out there. Matter of fact, I have a friend of mine, swears up and down, he absolutely has to have all these fancy features. Well, you know, good for him. Okay? He says Open Office won't do it, doesn't have the feature. Okay? Well, okay, fine. He can be the only person on the planet that pays the $490-some to buy OpenOffice. I mean, to buy Office. I'm sorry, not OpenOffice. Buy Office, because the rest of us don't need it. Okay? We can get by with OpenOffice, which is open. That's good. Open source. That's good. Free. That's even better. OpenOffice.org. Go there. Download it. Be happy. Sense the overall universal peace brought by open source software. Hallelujah. Okay. Next item. An awesome IBM Linux commercial. I don't know about you, but the Linux commercials that IBM has come up with, they're really pretty cool. Now, this whole thing that they did with the little kid that was supposed to be Linux, it was an allegory, you know? Was allegorical. But the idea was that Linux was represented by this little kid, and the little kid was growing and learning and understanding, and basically the world was finding out about this new genius that was being introduced to the world, and that was the idea of the Linux ads with the little kid. Okay? And this is one that somehow or another I missed. Okay? But it rocks. And I'm going to play the audio for you. There's a link in the blog to go there and actually see the video. And then when you see the video, check it out. It's got a whole bunch of stars in it, TV movie stars, that are interacting with young Linux, the kid. And it's really pretty cool. See, you know, kind of, you could play yourself a little game here, a little trivia game. Who's that star he's listening to? So let's play the audio and see what you think.
I think you should see this.
It's just a kid.
This is a G chord.
He's learning, absorbing. He's getting smarter every day.
Homo habilis was the first to use tools.
A player who makes the team great is more valuable than a great player. Losing yourself in the group for the good of the group, that's teamwork.
It's happening fast.
We've always watched the stars. If you look at the sky, you can see the beginning of time.
Collecting data is only the first step toward wisdom, but sharing data is the first step toward community.
Poetry. There's not much glory in poetry, only achievement.
Knowledge amplification. What he learns, we all learn. What he knows, we all benefit from.
One little thing can solve an incredibly complex problem.
Everything's about timing, kid.
This is business. Faster, better, cheaper. Constant improvement.
So, you want to fly, huh? Wind speed, thrust, it's physics.
Res publica non dominetur.
Plumbing, it's all about the tools.
Speak your mind. Don't back down.
Does he have a name?
His name is Lennox.
Whoa, that's just so cool. I particularly like Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali is sitting there and says, kid, speak your mind. I'm like, whoa, that's just so cool. Anyway, it's an awesome commercial. They kind of outdid themselves on that one. Check it out. You will love it. Anyway, probably a flashback for some of you. Probably already seen it, but I hadn't seen it. So I just, it kind of geek cultured me out. Okay, I just had to share that with you. Okay. Real quickly, Microsoft pays Novell big bucks, $348 million that Microsoft paid Novell. Now remember, I announced earlier that Microsoft and Novell had this deal, which was unbelievable. I talked about it last week on the podcast. I said, you know, hell must have frozen over because Microsoft and Novell were getting together to make Linux interoperate better with Windows. And Steve Ballmer announced this? The man that said Linux was evil? Whoa! Well, now it turns out, we're getting a little more details on this deal. It turns out Microsoft paid Novell $348 million as part of this deal for upfront use of its patents. Huh? That's weird. I want to know more about this somehow. This sounds a little strange. I had a friend of mine that said, hey, did you hear that Microsoft bought Linux? Well, first of all, you don't buy Linux. You know, it's not like they can go acquire a company and buy Linux. Linux is like air, okay? Open source, it's free. You know, you can't buy air. Now, you can buy compressed air in cylinders because somebody has done something with the air, but you can't just buy air because it's freely available. Okay, you have to have done something to make the air sellable, okay? And that's what people like Red Hat and other people do, or Novell with SUSE Linux. They do with Linux. They take the free Linux code and then they put their own spin on it, their own technology to kind of make it what they want it to be, and then they sell that and they sell services to support Linux. That's how it works. So, no, Microsoft didn't buy Linux, but they're doing something rather odd. I don't know. I don't trust Microsoft any farther than I can throw them. And given that they're in Seattle, Washington, in a big, huge, giant building, actually a whole big campus, dude, guaranteed, I can't throw them. Okay, a guy got the Windows tax refund. Now, what is the Windows tax? Well, the Windows tax is that every time you buy a computer from anybody, anywhere, Microsoft, because they are a monopoly, has required that manufacturer to bundle the price of Microsoft Windows into that PC. Now, if you're buying that PC to install Linux on it, why would you need a copy of Windows? You don't. But Microsoft has legally required the manufacturers to bundle a copy of Windows into that system. So you're going to pay that $100 and some dollars,
every single time period in the discussion. You don't have a choice because Microsoft's not going to give you a choice. That's just the way it is. Okay? However, in the open source world, we've come to talk about that as the Windows tax. Because Microsoft is a huge evil monopoly, they're causing everyone to pay the Windows tax whether they want to use Windows or not. And their excuse is, we don't know whether or not you're going to really use Windows or not, so we have to bundle it in. Right. You know, that'd be like a car dealer saying, okay, look, we're going to sell you this car, and we're going to charge you for air conditioning. And if you say, look, I don't want the air conditioning, they're going to say, look, we don't care. You're going to get the air conditioning whether you want it or not, period. How long will the car company survive doing that? Not very long, because they're not listening to their customers. Same kind of logic applies. Hey, computer manufacturers, if your customer says they don't want Windows, you don't sell them Windows. But unfortunately, Microsoft has them by the short hairs, and they've got all these agreements that force them to sell them Windows. So what this guy in England did, he's a sysadmin, so of course he's a Unixy guy. He said, dude, I'm getting my money back for Windows because I'm not going to use it. I would die before I use Windows, and I'm not going to use it. And so he very carefully documented taking his PC out of the box, hooking it up, and as soon as the screen came up that said, do you agree to the user license agreement, the EULA, end user license agreement, EULA, do you agree to that? He clicked no, and he took a picture of the screen. Then he moved on, and he went through every single step and documented every step of the way, took all the documentation, sent it to Dell, and Dell sent him his money back for the unused copy of Windows. Whoa! First time it's ever happened. You know Microsoft's got to be ticked off about that. Makes the doctors weak. Okay, next item. I'm having to rush through because we are so over time by about 2 minutes. It's just not funny. All right, next item. We're talking about, ooh, I beeped something. I didn't mean to beep something. I'm sorry I beeped it. I'm really sorry. I didn't mean to do that. Okay. Microsoft paid them big duck bucks. Let's go to the next item. A guy got the Windows tax refund. Next item. The server war is over and Linux has won. Wow. Okay. Phew, man, I just got totally bumfuzzled there. Bumfuzzled, by the way, for those of you in other countries, is a technical term used by Southerners to express themselves when they get confused. They get bumfuzzled. Now, as to the actual origin of the term, I have no idea. It's something I've heard my entire life. Bumfuzzled. You can look it up. Probably you won't find it, but there you go. Okay, the server war is over and Linux has won. IBM sponsored a study that shows that in the server world, Linux has won. Wow. Check it out. I've got a link. I've got a place where you can dig the story. It's comes from a blog by Dana Blankenhorn on ZDNet. Check it out. For sake of time, I'm just going to keep rolling. Just keep it going. Vista has gone gold too, and we don't care here at Dr. Bill the Computer Curmudgeon. I, for one, am not going to go out and buy Vista. Hey, I've got a few computers running XP. They work fine, and the rest of my computers are running Linux, so there you go. If I eventually get a copy of Vista, I'll let you know. But I wouldn't hold my breath, okay? That would be counterproductive to hold your breath. Okay, the last item right before the podcast was a message to tell you that the podcast would be late. It's late, but it's on its way, and now technically it is in the can and done, and it's not on its way anymore, so that message is now technically incorrect, and so you just don't have to worry about it. And the music is playing, so I need to shut up. Okay. Remember, until next week, that the doctor is out of here.